I'm Ruth, not John. Put that down a bit. Is that better? Thanks to Gabby, that was a great introduction and really set it up, I think, for what we were going to do. And we're kind of humbled about the courage of the two kids up there when I'm shaking like a leaf. So a while ago, I was listening to a Christian podcast, and in one of these, the speaker was telling a story about his family who were having a family meal. And one of the children choked on their food. I think we've got a first slide. Maybe the next one. So one of the children choked on their food. And as the son was trying to get his breath, the other siblings all started to chant, "Die, die, die." This became a bit of a tradition in their household, and it's actually become a bit of a tradition in our candy household too. It's not particularly kind or encouraging, especially for the person choking. But for most of us, we find it quite amusing. And thankfully, no one has died of a choking incident yet in our house. Now, the story may not appear immediately very relevant, but I'm hoping by the end, John will pull it together for you. A few weeks ago, Angus reminded us of the story of Joseph. And the main resource for kindness is for asking for God's help. Then Francis helped us think about how Jesus was inclusive in his kindness, reaching out to outcasts like Zacchaeus, lepers, and those who were less respected in society, like women and children. As Gabby said, we've been asked to look at how it takes courage sometimes to be kind, and looking at the passage of Naaman in Kings. As she said, Naaman was a notable warrior, and he had contracted leprosy. And leprosy, as most of you are aware, was a death sentence. If not immediately physically, it certainly was in terms of social standing. The focus of today, though, isn't on Naaman. It's on the nameless servant girl who suggested to her mistress that Naaman seek a prophet in Israel to get healed. Got the first, next slide, I think. I'm sure it wasn't the place of servants to offer unsolicited advice. I don't know what motivated the girl to offer this brain, kind, and life-saving suggestion. There are many reasons for her not to have offered her suggestion. Young, she was a girl, she was a servant. People may have suspected her of an ulterior motive. Like, is she doing it so that Naaman doesn't die and so she can keep a job, or just so that she doesn't contract leprosy? She may also have been thinking about the risks that she might have been at risk of being punished for making such an unsolicited suggestion. Next one. Her thinking could have become like a cobweb that traps her from doing a kind thing. However, she did choose to be kind. It made me think about my own behavior when I am kind or when I choose not to be kind. Why is it sometimes easier to be kinder to a stranger than at home? I will run and pick up a glove someone's dropped on the street, pick it back to them. But I'll walk past a pile of clean laundry on the stairs several times that belongs to a family member. In a restaurant, someone chokes, I look for a glass of water or I get ready to jump up and help. At home, we just laugh and chant. I don't know about you, but I have a tendency to overthink situations. I can get caught up in a web of conflicting reasons to carry out an act of kindness or not to. For example, the clean laundry on the stairs. Do I be kind and take it home? Do I leave it to teach a family member a lesson in responsibility? Do I take it up in case someone pops around and I want my house not to look quite so messy? Do I feel I'm weak if I backtrack on my instructions? Is it unfair for the other three who have obeyed the instructions to take up their laundry? Does it appear that I'm favoritizing one person if I take that up? So the cobweb entangles me. That's a wee fly trap. Subsequently, my kindness remains a thought, not an action. That's until I recall the words of Mother Teresa, and I have it actually as a screensaver on my phone for several years and pinned by my bed to try and help me with this problem. And here are some of the words. Highlight a few of them. She goes on to say, if you're kind, people may accuse you of kind anyway. Could you do today, maybe forgotten tomorrow. But anyway, give the world the best. It may never be enough. Give your best anyway. For you see, in the end, it was never between you and them. It was between you and God anyway.
So thanks to Ruth for her courage and her kindness in helping me out with this talk. There was a bit of robust discussion as to whether we both needed to say anything. I'm very glad that she has. So many acts of kindness can seem quite easy to make. What's the problem? Why do we need courage? Why do we need to take courage? The next slide. We don't always need a bottle of beer to give us courage. I thought it might be useful just to look at the definition of courage. Angus gave us a definition of kindness the other week, which he didn't find particularly helpful because it just said the state of being kind. But these definitions are slightly better, if I could have the next one. The ability to do something that frightens one, bravery, strength in the face of grief or pain, grace under pressure, and the choice and willingness to confront agony, pain, danger, uncertainty, or intimidation. In preparation for this, I also Googled, just like Gabby did, and I came across quite a useful thing called Ignatian courage. And there are 6 features of Ignatian courage, which I'd just like to run through a little bit. So first one begins with an openness to invitation from God. So it takes courage to allow God to make suggestions to us about what we should be doing. And we need to be open to those suggestions. It's birthed in an encounter with the other. Some things we do just for our own reputation and ego. I have an app on my phone called Strava, and many of you are on it. Some of you occasionally give me kudos when I get a personal best or if I do a good run or a cycle. And I get an ego boost from that, and I sometimes give an ego boost to a couple of these people here as well. But when we move beyond, you know, that just gives me a bit of a personal boost. But when we move beyond that individualism and we begin to encounter another person, seeing the needs of them and realizing we have the potential to sustain them some way, then we can move into, we can take courage to do that. And I've got a picture of someone who's seen the needs of others and realizes the potential she has to sustain them some way. It's not that one, sorry. Next one. There she is, Mary. And I know quite a lot of you have taken a few steps in a lot of big steps actually in Summerfield to sustain the needs of others. And that takes courage. The next item on the Ignatian courage list was it's cultivated in prayer and discernment. And this, I think, is about honesty, naming our fears and bringing them to God. And I think this is really helpful. A few weeks ago, I realized I was getting butterflies when I was going into work, and I was fearful because the number of phone backs that I had to make in a day was getting increasingly longer. Same for all the other doctors there. And I was getting fearful because I was worried that I was going to miss something. I was going to be late at making a diagnosis, but I might react angrily to somebody who was impatient. And I started taking a few minutes each morning just to say, God, I need some help today. Just help me to cope with whatever's thrown at me. I couldn't necessarily change the volume of calls, but maybe it's a question of having the strength, having some God really helping cope with that. The next step was, the next item was to take one step at a time. You can get overwhelmed with the what ifs, and they can grow and grow in our minds. But God gives us the, we need to sort of ask God to just give us the faith and capacity to take one step. I was thinking of, so in terms of registering with the Friends International Buddy Scheme, you're just asked to do 1 hour a week of conversation. And I thought, well, that's achievable. But I'm slightly worried it's going to grow and grow and grow into something bigger than I can cope with. But we just need courage to take one step. And it's contagious was the next item. And if we see others taking courageous steps, we might be encouraged to take them ourselves. And ultimately, the sixth point of the nation courage was it means being willing to have our hearts broken. Because if actions of faith were guaranteed to have a successful outcome, there would be no need for courage. But that's Ignatian courage. It talks about honesty and discernment to name our fears. So I thought I'd try to name a few of mine, and you may have your own list. It may be helpful to think about them. Ruth has already talked about fear of what other people think, what Mother Teresa calls ulterior motives, if we something kind. And it's certainly good for us to examine our motives, but ultimately, let's just do the thing. Fear that our efforts will be rejected. Sometimes it's necessary to me to give advice about lifestyle issues, diet, alcohol, smoking, because it is actually the most important thing for someone's health, but it's hard to do it in a way that it will be well received, and it's not always well received, as you can imagine. But when a patient is in more desperate need, the physical complaint has surfaced, they're perhaps more willing to address some of those issues. The servant girl, even though Naaman was commander of an army with status and his diagnosis could have easily become an outcast, that could have led to further ill health and possibly even death for him. Maybe because she knew the severity of his illness and the devastating effect it might have, he was braver to come forward and have the courage to suggest a solution. We can be misunderstood. I recently had a phone call from a lady who said, "You never did anything for my mother, and you never listened to me." And I wanted to shout and scream, and I wanted to list all the things I'd done for her mother, how much I enjoyed her mother's company and had a giggle with her. But I suppose I had to just, I was so flabbergasted, I had to just keep my mouth shut so I wouldn't say anything that would be regrettable. Sometimes we have to have courage, really, to let God deal with the details, right? To let him take those things and not justify ourselves. I've already talked about there can be a fear that if you make one act of kindness, it may grow arms and legs and lead on to other things and use up our resources. Angus spoke a few weeks ago about the resourceful kindness and being able to trust God. You know, well, let's just take that one step that he asks us to do and trust that he gives us the resources to deal with whatever comes after that. Sometimes there's fear of actual harm, physical harm. The girl could certainly have had reason to be fearful of this. a very presence as a servant to Naaman was because the bands from Aram had taken her captive. Who knows what might have happened to her family in those raids? Were they even still alive? We're not told. She could have easily thought, well, this is justice coming back to you again, leprosy. But as commander of the army, Naaman wasn't averse to making some ruthless decisions, including taking lives. And if someone had rubbed him up the wrong way, yet she spoke anyway. I want to recommend a film which Katie introduced us to. Maybe I could have the next slide. It's called Selma. I nearly called it Senga, but it's not Senga, it's Selma. And this is a film about Martin Luther King Jr. When he leads a march from Selma, which is a town in Alabama, to Montgomery, and demanding the rights of black people to register to vote in the state of Alabama. At that time, they didn't have, it was very difficult for them to register even to vote. And even though it was a peaceful protest, there was violence inflicted on the marchers by state troopers, and there were deaths of both blacks and whites who were supporting the march. And the ultimate price was paid by several marchers. Ultimately, the bill was passed. There's plenty of other examples about Gandhi also led many non-violent protests for fight for Indian independence. More recently, we've seen the death of Sir David Amos last week. Have the next one. Stabbed to death in his own constituency whilst doing surgery. He'd made himself open to his constituents, he'd made himself vulnerable, and he'd paid the ultimate price. And when I think of these people, there's a big challenge. Their courage, in this sense, is quite contagious. It challenges us to question how willing we are to make a sacrifice for the greater good of others. Jesus said, John 12, unless a grain of wheat falls into the ground and dies, it cannot bear fruit. And I think there's something very, very powerful in this message that in the power of the cross, really. A while ago, a few of us in the New Seekers group were thinking about what are the non-negotiables of our faith. And one for me was the thing about the cross, as well as being Christ's death. There is something profound in the idea that we have to die to ourselves for there to be roots, for there to be spiritual fruit. So in summary, what does it take to be courageously kind? I want to think again of the words of Mother Teresa. In the final analysis, it is between you and God. It was never between you and them anyway, between us and God. And let's think, unless of those words of Jesus, unless a grain of wheat falls into the ground and dies, the next slide actually. Unless a grain of wheat falls into the ground and dies, it cannot bear fruit. So I suppose, coming back to Ruth's opening story, what does it take to have courageous kindness? It's basically to get over yourself. Die, die, die.